Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Kimberly Elizabeth Sherman-Grove. Each week, we visit with an author from our region. We get an introduction to their work and a glimpse into their lives sometimes. We find out what prompts them to write, and we give them an opportunity to hear them read from their work. And this week, we're very pleased to have Kim Grove with us. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you.
Kim spent 20 years in the media industry. She's been published in the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, the Christian Science Monitor, and many local publications. She enjoys looking for gems in other people's work and helping them polish their writing. She has a BA from the University of Toronto and a creative writing diploma from George Brown College. She's taught creative writing courses at Loyalist College and to many community groups. Her book, Stories Inked, co-authored with Judy Geller, was published last spring. And Family Ties, an anthology of stories, poems, and tales of good food, including recipes, all connected by family, has just been released. Kim is the editor of this very engaging anthology. So, what was your purpose in putting this book together?
Well, one of the favorite things that we did as a family was get around the dining room table and tell stories. I just knew that other people had stories to tell, too. So my husband is a publisher, and so he said, well, maybe we should do a book of family stories. So I was all for that. So he said, only if you'll edit it. I said, okay, let's go.
Let's go, yes. So tell us about some of the authors who wrote for it. Where did they all come from?
Well, that's the beauty of the internet. And my husband, being a publisher, has lots of contacts with writers. So he just sent out a call for submissions, and people responded beautifully and sent in more than we could actually publish. It was great.
And from all over, right?
Yes, that's right. One from Malta, a lot from the United States.
Mm-hmm. Family Ties is part of a series, though, right?
Yes, that's right. My husband did a series about grandmothers and grandfathers, and so it's kind of a natural, I guess, to do the whole family.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's how you gather contributors from such a huge area.
Yes.
And I guess you didn't know all the writers beforehand.
No, most of them I didn't know at all.
So do you feel you've got to know them through working on this
yes,
book?
Yes, through working on the book. And also we had a book launch in Toronto, and I got to meet them in person, which was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And their families. Some of them brought their family members out, too. It was great.
Well, how about reading to us something from Family Ties?
Sure. Okay. Okay, well, I'll just read a little bit of three stories.
Okay.
I'll start with my story, which was called Thanks to My Dad. No one could tell a story like my father, and he would entertain our family of seven around the dinner table all year long. Whatever the topic, he had a funny story for it. And for the special occasion of Christmas, he would tell his favorite, the Spanish dancer. And he'd act it out with gusto, as though he were playing charades. A woman arrives at a party very late. As she approaches the home, she hears music. How wonderful to have live music, she thinks, realizing that someone is energetically playing the piano in the living room. Noticing a rose in the vase in the hallway, she decides to make a flamboyant entrance for her friends. She puts the rose between her teeth. She dances into the room. At this point in the story, my dad would get up from his chair, start humming some Spanish flamenco-type music, and grit his teeth over one finger as if he had a thorny stem in his mouth. He'd wave his arms as though flinging open the living room doors, and he would begin to dance around the room. As the woman looks around, she realizes she doesn't recognize anyone. She has interrupted a serious piano recital. Instead of stopping and excusing herself, she simply continues dancing backwards towards the door, exits while placing the rose back in the vase, and is never seen again.
Such a wonderful story.
So that was one of our family. Then this is a family story. It doesn't start off so funny, unfortunately. It's called Overcoming Tragedy, and it's by Vern Whalen. When tragedies happen in families, it is hard to know how to continue in life. As a boy of 12, I'd been dragging my feet both at home and at school. I was suffering from a bad case of grief. My older brother, Terry, had died suddenly the summer before. I was in a rumination rut, having trouble moving life forward. My father, who was no doubt also hurting inside, found a way to snap me out of the deep depression. He came home from his work at the cement plant with news that I was going to be going to a National Hockey League game in Toronto. Mr. Hall, who worked with my dad, needed someone to do his shift on Saturday night so he could go to Maple Leaf Gardens. In our small village of Point Anne, his son, Bobby, was playing in the NHL for the Chicago Blackhawks. As one of the biggest things that had ever happened in our town, everyone closely followed the exciting exploits of the very young, dynamic Golden Jet. My father covered the shift on the condition that Mr. Hall took me with him to the game. And he tells the story of a 12-year-old going to the game, and it's wonderful.
It's a terrific story.
This one is because of the time of year. It's called A Different Christmas, and it's by Richard Parker. Just the mention of Christmas can bring back a childhood. When I was a little guy, about 5 years old, I remember a news flash that interrupted the TV program, telling my sister and I that an unidentified object was being monitored by NORAD and was heading our way. That was enough to convince us that Santa would soon arrive, so we didn't put up any fuss when Mom told us to go to bed. I was too young to notice that there was no Christmas tree in the living room, and too ignorant to realize that the most I would be getting in my stocking was an orange, an apple, and a few suckers. Dad had been laid off from Hydro for quite a while. Mom was working as a cashier at Powers, taking as many hours as she could so that food could continue to bless our table. Neither of them was looking forward to the disappointment their two children were going to experience. I don't remember ever wanting for anything, but I do remember never having anything of my own. We kids had to share everything, our toys, clothes, and even if my sister had been a boy, we would probably have had to share underwear. We didn't feel hard done by. That's just the way it was. We didn't realize that this particular year was going to be the worst. Dad couldn't get any work until the new year when he would be able to be rehired by Hydro, maybe. Excitement made it impossible to sleep. I remember listening to the sing-along with Mitch Christmas TV show. I could imagine Mom and Dad's heads bobbing along with the music. When there was a knock at the door, my imagination went astray, thinking that maybe Santa was tired of going down chimneys and had come to our door. My sister and I snuck out of our beds, ran to the stairs, and went down just enough steps to hear the guest without being caught where we weren't supposed to be. We saw person after person enter our home with something in their hands. Wrapped gifts, food, a turkey, and even a tree with decorations on it came in the door. All the people were from our Regent Park United Church that Mom took us to each Sunday. Mom played the organ and conducted the choir as her contribution to the church services. Now her church family was all coming to her aid. I remember thinking, why are these people bringing all this stuff? After all, Santa was on his way and he would bring everything. I looked over to my mother, who started to cry. It was my dad who scared me. He was crying too. I had never seen my dad cry. Never. I didn't think it was possible. Somehow all the church friends had found out that there wouldn't be much of a Christmas for us that year unless they helped. As they shared their gifts, Mitch Miller and his bouncing ball were singing "O Holy Night." Is it any wonder that that is my favorite piece of Christmas music?
That is a lovely, lovely story.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about the author then. Did he live in Toronto?
Yes, he did, and he did have a tough upbringing. Mm. And I think that story points that out. A struggle.
Is he now a full-time writer? What does he do?
No, actually, he was a fireman, and he was also a paramedic. He changed jobs kind of halfway through his career. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's just retired as a firefighter and was very successful at it. He used to say that he loved to be stationed at Finch and, you know, the worst place you could be, but he said it was always active. Yeah.
Well, you know, he's probably got a whole book full of stories.
He does. That's right. Yes, that's true, Felicity. Yes, right.
Thank you, Kim.
Yeah.
And now I think we'll take a short break.